April is National Poetry Month, and Public Radio 90 observes the occasion by presenting readings by poets from the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. Marty Akitz is a contingent professor in the English department at Northern Michigan University. He's also the current UP Poet Laureate.
Letter to my mother-in-law. It has been 12 years since you stopped breathing. Beth is doing well, in sickness and in health. Turns out she inherited your family's need for lithium, the love for razors, the smell of gas. Don't worry. She's just mapped her arms and breasts with scars. Nothing too deep, too dangerous. You have a granddaughter, 4 years old, with Beth's eyes, my chin, Celeste. I often hear your laugh and her laugh, loud, strong enough to make your chest leap like spawning salmon, even after your breasts were taken. When Celeste showered one day with your daughter, she traced the pink slashes on Beth's breasts, as if she were finger painting. She asked Beth what they were, where they came from. They look like cave drawings to me, bear claw and tree, ancestral mammoth hunts, harvest festivals, shaman mothers. Mommy hurt herself, Beth said. That's why you shouldn't play with scissors. Your granddaughter nodded, watched the shower water wash over the tribal etchings on her mother's breasts, nipples. Perhaps, like the ancient prophets studying the entrails of oxen for visions of what is to come, if I study the hieroglyphs on your daughter's chest, I will see the story of my daughter, her genesis and revelations. Perhaps if I scrub Celeste long enough and hard enough until her skin glows like moon, I can change the constellation of her DNA, remove the promises passed down from mother to daughter to granddaughter in a single pearl of blood. Docus Carota Elegy for Missy. I see them in ditches on my way to work. Throngs of them spill up the grassy hill like refugee seraphs fleeing smoke and fire, the brimstone of earthly life. They bob and bend in car wakes, remind me of Christmas votives in a midnight church, all those bright knuckles cracking with salvation. Last night, I said a prayer for your brother, the way I did as a child when death was just a panel in a comic book, Superman in white tights, soaring over a field of kryptonite, bullets dancing off his alien muscles as he ascended through stratus, nimbus, cumulus, troposphere, thermosphere, exosphere. That was your brother Tuesday morning, defeating the Lex Luthor of his body, rising and rising into constellations of wild carrot, fists clenched, aimed straight into the eye of God. Watching my daughter dance at Kauffman Auditorium. She's a comet of leg and arm and sound, burns gold in the atmosphere of this place, whirls, spins, eats the oxygen near her, a celestial body that appears on no star chart, sails through the universe on no set orbit, glances off moons, blasts through asteroid belts and clouds of gas, ever expanding in her own Big Bang, flinging herself out and out beyond the edges of Lepus and Lupus, Cygnus and Scorpius, until she becomes her own constellation of dervish light. Me? I believe the Earth is flat. that if I listen hard enough, I will hear oceans spilling off the horizon into the bowl of space, that I am still the center of her cosmology, and my gravity still calls to her, pulls her back into the collapsing star of my heart. Recalling the waves of Big Sur in Sault Ste. Marie. It was a place of waves. They were everywhere. I slept with them, ate eggs and oatmeal with them, read to them, hiked through red alder, black cottonwood with them, stripped naked, bathed in the brine and foam, let them press into spaces of my body only my wife's lips knew. All day I was surrounded by their apocalyptic sound, urging me to build a boat, collect pairs of cougar, condor, black bear, all that deserved to be saved, and wait for the crests and troughs to revise the stanzas of the coast into oblivion. Like the waves, I never rested, would leave my cabin at 3 a.m. to walk along the Pacific cliffs, listen to the waves recite their poetry of kelp, sea otter, cormorant. Even now, as I write these lines in a hotel room by the St. Mary's River, where Superior and Huron spill into each other, I am ghosted by their voices. Still hear them coming in, going out, like great freighters, silvered by moonlight, passing through the locks into the blank pages of night. Hunger. Her cry was a knuckle that cracked night in two. I stumbled to the crib, looked down at my 5-day-old daughter. She was called in a blanket, eyes large, nervous as a doe mid-January, nosing snow for reindeer moss, welts of wintergreen berry. I had yet to adjust to these migrations of diaper, milk, sleep, milk again, like arrows of geese bleeding north, south, north, south, crossing, recrossing the continent of my home. I reached down, lifted my daughter, her limbs tense in my arms, expectant mouth pressed against my chest, greedy for slugs of milk. I held her close, marveled at her naked need, how the bee of her tongue searched the dark fields of my body for pistil, pollen, stamen, nectar. She scavenged the air for food, became more and more frantic when the manna of my wife didn't fall from the heavens into her open lips. This is the first lesson we learn, to follow our stomachs like natal stars through mountain and desert, dust bowl and drought, to that feeding trough where we find the Christ child sleeping. We shove him aside, gorge ourselves on oats and hay before we remember to say grace. Thoughts of darkness and light on the winter solstice. The night, as long as Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments, starts with baby whale and bulrushes, stones the size of elephants, plagues of blood and darkness. Ribs of light crack off, disappear into the belly of star and cloud and cold. No moon, just endless moments of ash, smolder, embers of everything day. I sit in the lobby of a hotel in a city at the edge of polar night. Think of you, the eclipse of your life, how light stays in the corners where you still find pieces of paper with her handwriting, books dog-eared by her fingers, presents purchased, waiting for the bright wrap of morning. Darkness can be a friend, hold you when bright grief batters your heart, sneaks into those fissures, cracks, like light seeping under a doorframe into a lightless room. Darkness holds the possibility that you might see her again, her shadow fingers in your hair, rearranging gray locks, shadow palms on your cheeks, warming paper skin, shadow words in your ears, whispering the resurrection of Christmas. How you will find her in an evergreen bush, burning with mountain fire. She will carve her name in the stone tablets of your heart. Bigfoot takes his wife to Mount Rushmore for their honeymoon. Roosevelt watches as they come together on Lincoln's hair, become an avalanche of finger, tongue, arm, leg. They make buffalo noises, passenger pigeon noises that haven't been heard since before McKinley became extinct in New York. Under Roosevelt's granite gaze, the Bigfoots do what they have been doing for hundreds of years, when Washington's teeth weren't wood, when the quills Jefferson wrote, "We hold these truths with," were still helping ducks and geese swing south. They bite neck, shoulder, paw and plow fields of thigh, let high star-spangled banner sounds spill under the milkweed stars. Wild for fur, skin, they earthquake into each other, unite their states without Constitution or Congress. No walls or borders stop them. Their guiding torch, the tug and pull of tempest-tossed heart. They are spacious sky, amber wave, beautiful pilgrim feet. And below them, the stone faces stare into the distance, the way bachelor uncles and maiden aunts do at wedding receptions, embarrassed by the sway and grind of that first slow dance. Bigfoot tries to fix his daughter's broken heart. Since he only knows how to pray with fingers, arms, he fills her cave with spider webs, traps her sobs, cocoons them, takes them down to the lake to drown. Since the ground is still too frozen to dig a grave. Since he wants to remind her that she is alive, he takes her to the valley where she was born, where he licked birth from her body in great, salty gulps. Since love isn't a porcupine he can crush with a rock. Since she feels abandoned, he gives her ribs of a deer bleached by winter sun. To hug herself. They splinter after one day, become dander and crumb. Since love's eyes don't glow green in moonlight. Since she won't eat, he collects fistfuls of spring peepers, scoops them between her lips. They sing in her mouth. Since love doesn't blossom like mushrooms in mud and rot. Since she feels unimportant, he brings a skunk to her, places it on her head like a crown. Since love moves faster than flea, lice, shadow. Since he doesn't know the word love, he paints her face with clay, tenderly, with his tongue. Since love is big and small, himself. An appleseed.
These National Poetry Month readings are a Public Radio 90 production, recorded and produced in the facilities of WNMU-FM at Northern Michigan University. I'm producer and host Kurt Hosworth. Thanks for listening.